All right. Good morning, beautiful people. Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. My name is Sansara Taylor. I am your guest host again this week, and I am so happy to be back with you. I hope that last week you had a good holiday, and that for all of you who are tuned in, you enjoyed hearing Michael Slate's voice again on these airwaves as we rebroadcast a special Thanksgiving look at the genocidal history of this country and the real roots of Thanksgiving. So I hope you enjoyed, and I'm glad to be back with you. Today we have a really wonderful show for you. We're going to be going deeper into very urgent and timely themes that we have been covering. December 1st was the one-year anniversary of when the United States Supreme Court heard the oral arguments in the case Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization out of Mississippi that went on to overturn Roe v. Wade, went on to overturn nearly 50 years of precedent of women's fundamental right to abortion being protected as a constitutional protection that has been so central to one in three or one in four women's lives in this country. This right was ripped away, and 1 year ago yesterday, the oral arguments were heard. And so we're going to take a look at why this is going on, why this right has been under attack, what is at stake for the lives of women, for half of society, half of humanity, the real-world consequence of having lost the right to abortion. I know here in California, a lot of people feel safe from this, but over 22 million women and girls across this country have lost the right to control their bodies, their lives, their reproduction. We're going to look at what this means. And even more, we're going to go deeply into what is driving this. I'm going to share an excerpt of the profound, the really extraordinary interview that I had the honor and the privilege of conducting with the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian, the wide-ranging three-part, you know, really deep interview with Bob Avakian that I did together with Andy Z. And as part of this, because Bob Avakian has been analyzing and warning about the rise of Christian fascism for decades, he stood out in this way. He has really sounded the alarm and understood what's at stake in this fight. And he's been providing leadership for people over how to fight this and what this has to do with the need and the basis to make revolution. So we asked him about this, and I'm going to share with you a portion of his answer. It's very deep. We're going to get into it. We'll open up the phone lines. We're going to talk with you about this and invite you into discussing what's going on, why it's happening. So that's going to be the bulk of our show today. But before we go there, we have a shorter segment. We cannot let this slide. We are going to hear from Rafael Cadaris. He's been a guest several times in recent weeks on this program because he has been covering the rising anti-Semitism that's been pumped out, the poison, the Nazi poison that's been pumped out by Kanye West and others. And this past week, this took a leap with Kanye West. Nick Fuentes, who is an open Holocaust-denying white supremacist Nazi, eating dinner with Donald Trump down at Mar-a-Lago. And it's only gotten worse since then. So we're going to take a few minutes. We're going to hear from Rafael, and then we'll come back at the other end and get into abortion. Let's listen.
Okay. So a black Nazi and a white Nazi and an orange Nazi go into a golf club for dinner. This is not how the joke begins. This is how genocides begin. Last week, Donald Trump invited virulent anti-Semite, Christian fascist, MAGA moron Kanye West to dinner at his Mar-a-Lago country club. Kanye brought along his new friend, Nick Fuentes. According to Kanye, Trump was really impressed with Fuentes. According to Fuentes, Trump told me he liked me. Who is Nick Fuentes? No, he's not a far-right activist, as the Washington Post called him. He's a Nazi, an open white supremacist, misogynist, anti-Semitic, Holocaust-denying Nazi. Someone who was on the ground in Charlottesville with the torch-bearing Nazis defending a monument to slavery, and at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th for Trump's fascist coup attempt, declaring afterwards that it was awesome, and I'm not going to pretend like it wasn't. Nick Fuentes says the quiet part out loud, and he's now a rising star of the MAGA fascist movement, with close ties to Republican fascist politicians like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar, and an army of followers who call themselves Groypers. But to understand the significance of Trump beginning his campaign for president by meeting with Nick Fuentes, you have to see and hear him in his own words.
Send the military into these black neighborhoods, make the streets safe, they'll complain about it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They're never going to vote for us.
I want this country to be run by Catholics, not Jews.
This woman is worshiping rocks. She's lying about men. I said, what happened in the good old days 1,000 years ago when people like this, instead of arguing with them or saying, hey, listen, darling, everything's okay, they would dunk them in the river or burn them alive. I said, this is the kind of thing that we need to see more of. I could go on the show and say, hey, you know, these blacks, hey, 13% of the population, half the crime, you know, they struggle with the impulse control, they're violent. And then they'd say, bet you wouldn't say that in front of a black person because they're a thug that'll hit me. Like, this nation welcomed Jewish people into America. And then this is what we get. I've heard enough about this Holocaust. I've heard enough about it. You know, the real Holocaust was Jesus Christ being crucified. That was a real Holocaust.
This is what's now being mainstreamed. Did the Republican Party leaders immediately condemn this Nazi meeting? They were silent for a week and then issued some half-assed condemnations that let Trump off the hook. Did Trump denounce Fuentes or try to distance himself from him? Not an inch. He merely claimed that he didn't know who Fuentes was ahead of time. Now, for Trump, lying is as natural as breathing. But even if this were true, he does know who Kanye is. You know, the guy who spent the last 2 months vomiting a tidal wave of lies and hatred against Jewish people.
DEFCON 3 on Jewish people.
I could say anti-Semitic things and Adidas can't drop me. Now what?
You just get used to getting screwed by the Jewish media.
The red are the executives that are Jewish at these companies.
And he's telling me, like, yo, I want you to visit the Holocaust Museum. And I was like, yo, I want you to visit Planned Parenthood. That's our Holocaust Museum.
And Kanye and Fuentes know who Trump is. A genocidal racist to his core.
These are animals.
Oh, look at my African-American over here.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists.
Someone who is willing and eager to break all the rules and unleash violence to impose a white Christian fascist America. To all the liberals out there, if you think the MAGA threat is going away because the Republicans didn't pull off their red wave and many of the candidates that Trump endorsed lost in the midterm elections, you need to wake up and smell the fascism brewing even more vicious, vengeful, and determined. This white supremacist fascism is not going away because it's deeply embedded in the roots and fabric of this country. Because a section of the capitalist imperialist ruling class represented by the Republican Party is convinced that this fascism is necessary in order to deal with economic and social changes that they believe are fraying and undermining the U.S. empire. And because they've unleashed a lunatic and rabid base of tens of millions that is pushing the Republican politicians to further extremes. This dinner between the number one fascist politician, the dangerous clown Kanye, and this Nazi youth leader, and the silent endorsement of the Republican Party until they were finally forced to comment, is a sign of how far things have come and where they're heading if this dynamic continues. And one more thing. To those who say that Kanye has a point,
Kanye was right.
He's a free thinker.
You gotta realize he's right. The Jays do control the music industry and everything else about America.
Kanye West is the gift that keeps on giving.
Kanye is right about this one.
Kanye West was right.
And who think that the problem is that some other group is holding you down? Maybe it's Latinos, Asians, Jews, or is it women or gay people or whoever? The only point this motherfucker has is the one that's got you falling for the oldest three-car money game in the book, divide and conquer. The ruling classes have used this trick for 2,000 years, playing the Jews as scapegoats, blaming them as a people, or singling out one or two prominent Jews for the ills and evils of systems founded on exploitation. Today, the name of that system is capitalism imperialism. And until you wake up to that, you will be played against the most fundamental interests of the masses of black people and even be led to carry out horrific crimes against others. In conclusion, the last thing we need, the last thing black people and people overall need are black Nazis.
All right, that was Rafael Cadeiras. And that was a segment he put together for the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show, the new episode at youtube.com/TheRevComes. And I appreciate what he had to say there. It's really poison. It's dangerous. It's astonishing how rapidly this anti-Semitism, this straight-up Nazi white supremacist politics is being mainstreamed, and how silent society is about it, and how many people, not the majority, far from the majority, but way too many people from among the oppressed are taking the bait and echoing this. And so I think it's so important we've been covering this, that Rafaela has been on it, that I wanted to share that with you. And with that, we're going to move forward into the heart of today's program. We're going to be looking at this question, which intersects with what we just heard, of women's fundamental right to abortion, which concentrates the enslavement or the liberation of women, and how this is connected to the nature of the society we live under. What's driving the attack on this right? So to get us in the mood and to provide a little musical transition, we are going to take a moment to hear a song. It's Kill My Coquette by Boots Off Our Back. And once again, you are listening to The Michael Slate Show. That was Boots Off My Back by Kill My Coquette. I think I was slightly dyslexic and said it the other way around before we played the song, but that was Boots Off Our Backs by Kill My Coquette. And here in the studio, we have some people dancing. That's very nice. We're going to talk about this now. So over the last year, the Supreme Court of the highest court in the country, in the most powerful country in the world, heard oral arguments in the case Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization that would go on to overturn women's fundamental right to abortion, over 50 years of constitutional protection for women's ability to decide for themselves when and whether to have a child. And on that day, 1 year ago, the fascists on the Supreme Court talked about women's lives with all the piousness, all the self-righteousness, and all the cruelty of medieval high priests. Brett Kavanaugh and Clarence Thomas, for example, openly agonized over how to weigh the value of a full-grown human woman with that of a clump of cells growing inside of her. And I want you to think about the barbarity of that, and think about the thousands of years of brutality and violent degradation of women that it flows from. Think of the centuries of women in every part of the world and every culture who have been treated as property of men and breeders of children. Think of the women who've been shamed and outcast and even killed if they didn't bear children. Think of the women who were murdered through the ritualized violence of men gathering to join together in throwing stones at the woman if she could not produce a bloody sheet on her wedding night to prove that she was a virgin before marriage, because then it would be unclear whether the children she bore belonged to her husband. And no, I don't want your mind to only go to the countries of Iran and Afghanistan with the Islamic fundamentalists. I want you to think about the fact that this is written into the Christian Bible as well. In Deuteronomy 22, 13 through 21, it commands the stoning of women to death if they're not virgins when they are married. And this tradition is echoed today in this country's cult of purity rings for teenage girls and the virginal white wedding dress, which is mainstream. This is still with us. So think what it means that people who can even ask such a question, how to weigh a clump of cells inside a woman's body with the value of that full-grown woman human, people who could ask questions like this sit in judgment and are able to control the lives and destinies of half of society and half of humanity. Ask yourself, what kind of society are we living in? What kind of world is this? And why should we put up with it for 1 second more? You know, today, 1 year after this Supreme Court hearing, 6 months after the right to abortion was overturned, we are being told to celebrate the so-called wins for abortion rights in the midterm elections because a few states where abortion was specifically on the ballot, including here in California, voters voted in support of the right to abortion. But this is faulty logic. I really want to stress this, especially for people listening in places where abortion is still protected. You can only claim that abortion won in the midterms if you are willing to adjust to, accept, and erase the fact that over 22 million women and girls across this country have lost the right to abortion. You have to ignore the women in Ohio and Texas and Missouri and Idaho and South Dakota and Kentucky and Wisconsin and Arkansas and beyond who are sent home from hospitals as they bleed out and risk infection or death from miscarriages. You have to accept and ignore the 17-year-old girl living in her car, the 30-year-old with four kids already and a boyfriend who hits her, the woman with plans to go to college or pursue her passion for music, all of these women and countless more like them having to foreclose those plans, being driven deeper into poverty, being tied even more desperately to their abusers and told that their hopes and their dreams and their aspirations for their lives mean nothing because if she becomes pregnant, even if she doesn't want it, she will be forced by the state to have a child against her will. This is going on now. This is happening every day. This is not a win. This is intolerable. And the idea is also delusional that these wins for abortion in a few states can last, because even where abortion is protected at the state level, this could be undone in a second by a federal abortion ban or by a ruling from the Supreme Court, which is exactly what the fascist movement that clawed its way into controlling the Republican Party and the Supreme Court, and which has a rabid social base of millions of crazed, violence-prone fanatics, it's exactly what they are intending to do, to criminalize abortion everywhere and to go after birth control as well. And this is only part of the horrors they are pushing. The white supremacist, anti-immigrant, anti-LGBTQ, anti-Semitic, climate-destroying, election-denying horrors. So it is time for the decent people of this country to wake up and to look deeper. We are not going to solve this emergency through relying on this system's elections. The problem is much more deeply rooted and the solution is much more radical. So to get into this, I want to share with you, I had the opportunity to ask Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, about this assault on abortion rights, where it's coming from, and what it's going to take to deal with it. And I want to share with you what he had to say about that. It's a substantive answer. We're going to take the time to listen to it. And then I'm going to come back and we're going to open up the phone lines and spend the rest of the hour talking about this with you. So this is Bob Avakian from the RNL Interviews. Let's listen. I want to ask one more question about the situation that we confront, and you touched on it with the Supreme Court overturning women's fundamental right to abortion. And this, as you said, this sent shockwaves across this country and has been shattering the lives of women and girls on a massive scale already, and worse is to come. And millions of people are outraged by this. Many, many are terrified about it. But most have no idea, no real understanding as to why this is happening. And it really stands out that you have been analyzing and warning about this and leading people
in how to fight against this assault on abortion and what it concentrates for decades. I wondered if you could talk some about what you see concentrated in this fight around abortion and how this relates to the revolution that we need to make.
Well, first of all, you have to understand, why has there been this attack? And yes, it's been an attack on women's right to abortion. Go ask any of the Christian fascists out there who are the stormtroopers for this, and they'll tell you straight up it's about controlling women and getting women to be back in their subordinate position, because in the eyes of these people, they're getting all out of control. That doesn't mean that people who are, you know, trans people who may have the situation where they can get pregnant shouldn't have the right to abortion. Of course they should. But the essence of what's going on here and has been going on for decades is the attack, to forcibly subjugate women even more thoroughly and viciously than they already are discriminated against and violently oppressed under this system. And, you know, you have to go deeper. Ask yourself, where did all these Christian fascists come from? I mean, yes, you know, they if you listen to them, they'll often say, that satanic woman, Madeleine Murray O'Hare, went to the Supreme Court in 1962 and challenged the right of schools to carry out prayer in the schools. And the stupid and satanic Supreme Court at that time, before we got a hold of it, that stupid Supreme Court actually went along with it and overturned the right to have prayer in the schools. And ever since they kicked God out of the schools in the early 1960s, because of that satanic woman, Madeleine Murray O'Hare, and that terrible Supreme Court, everything has gone to hell in this country. Now, a lot of them will tell you this, or they'll say it even if you don't ask them, and even if you don't want to hear it. But let's go deeper. Where did this whole Christian fascist thing come from and why? Because there have been, you know, if you go read that Raymond Lotta article on Revcom.us that I referred to, Imperialist Parasitism and Social and Class Recomposition in the U.S., you know, if you go read that, you will see, you know, spelled out concretely that there have been major changes both internationally and within the U.S. in the economy. And one of the major changes has been that because of the reconfiguring of the economy, there's more need for people in professional categories, you know, in the technical, you know, categories and so on. And so this has opened up more opportunity, and together with struggle that's been waged since the 70s in particular against the oppression of women, this has resulted in opening up a lot more of these positions, including, you know, college admissions and so on, to women. I think women now outnumber men in the universities. And so, you know, that has created a situation where a lot of women, it's not that they're no longer oppressed. I mean, just look at the statistics. How many are raped? You know, look at the massive, you know, pornography, which is just an assault on women as a whole, everywhere. You know, and it's not agency, it's oppression, okay? That's one thing that I can't stand is when people who don't really want to take on the system at all or in any serious way think they can get over, you know, I don't know whom they're trying to get over on, but and other than other people who are also suffering, but they try to get over by rebranding oppression as agency. Sex work, that's agency. No, it's not, it's oppression. It's institutionalized, financialized degradation of women. You know, so just to go on it for a second, because I think this is important. You know, some of these people say, well, you know, under capitalism, any kind of job you have is exploitative. So what's the difference in sex work? Well, there is a difference. Yes, capitalism is a system based on exploitation, you know, and and especially super exploitation of people, including, as I said, more than 150 million children in the third world. But, you know, if you're working in a factory, say in Bangladesh, as a woman producing clothes, you're being exploited in producing those clothes, but the product you're working on and producing is clothes. If you're working in the so-called sex industry, which is just, as I said, you know, vicious exploitation and institutionalized and financialized degradation of women, because what is the product? Besides your exploitation, what is the product? The product is the degradation of women. It's not clothes, it's not food, it's not televisions. The product, besides your exploitation, the product is the degradation of women. That's the whole point of it. And the same in pornography. So, you know, all this is a backlash against these changes that have occurred, you know, the incel phenomenon where men, you know, want to rape women because they can't get women to agree to have sex with them the way they want. I mean, they openly talk about raping women, you know. And, this, you know, these are all phenomena that have occurred because of, fundamentally because of underlying changes in the economy, which then interacts with, you know, struggles of people and resulting changes in the social relations. And so a big part of what has been driving this fascist movement is these changes that have resulted in women have a little bit more independence, especially women in the, you know, more professional categories. But even women working at lower jobs who have their own income. I remember, I never quite knew what exactly he was getting at with this, but I used to have a record way back in the day when I was in high school of the blues singer Leadbelly. And he introduced one of his, he had a song called National Defense Blues because it was about the World War II. And when a lot of, you know, black people came from the South, and one of the first things they did was to get jobs in the war industries, the defense plants. And that included a number of women. And so Leadbelly introduced this song. He said, people come to me, men, he meant men, come to me and say, Leadbelly. And I say, yeah. They say, I can't control my woman the way I used to. And I say, yeah. And they say, well, Leadbelly, you know, they go and work in a defense plant and they got their own money and I can't tell them what to do the way I used to. And I said, yeah. And they said, well, Leadbelly, can't you do something about this? So he wrote the song National Defense Blues, which wasn't exactly about that. But I never quite knew from what point of view he was telling his story. But anyway, it reflects something, and this is happening on a, you know, major scale in the last couple of, number of decades. So this is a big part of what's driving the fascist movement, is wanting to forcibly, you know, push women and control women back into a subordinated position, you know, even more than they already are under the system, because there's plenty of oppression all the time. But they wanted, you know, back the way it was even before these minor, relatively minor, but real changes have occurred. And so the other thing to understand is the leaders of this Christian fascism, going back to someone like Jerry Falwell, who founded the Moral Majority and founded you know, Liberty University. Now, you know, one of the things that, you know, I never realized this till I was reading recently, Liberty University is a massive university now. It has tens of thousands of students. And, you know, I like to follow the NCAA tournament championship, but here comes Liberty University all of a sudden playing, and I say, anybody, beat these motherfuckers, okay? I don't care. I'll even root for Baylor. Just fucking another Christian bunch of Christian fundamentalists. Just beat these motherfuckers and get them out of this tournament now, okay? But, you know, Jerry Falwell founded, you know, that university and got going with the Moral Majority, him and Pat Robertson and all these Christian fundamentalists. And Jerry Falwell, at the beginning, in the 50s, was openly opposed to the civil rights movement. And then he had to do a whole mea culpa. Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have opposed that. Well, then he turned around and opposed the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa in the 80s, by the way. So he wasn't that sorry. But what he did recognize, this is tactically unwise. You know, the civil rights movement, you know, the ruling class of this country, because of its needs internationally, is going to make concessions to the civil rights struggle. It's going to, you know, abolish some legal segregation, open up some positions to black people, and, you know, so on and so forth. So he switched gears, and then they, in the 70s, they concentrated their whole thrust around the oppression of women. They decided this is, you know, one of them openly said, this is a door through which we can get all these, you know, people who are upset about all these things, including the, you know, the concessions to the struggle against white supremacy. We can get them all by making the thing about abortion so-called killing of babies. And so, you know, this is why they took this up. And but, you know, again, all this was, you know, what was going on underneath all this was changes in the economy because of the needs of U.S. imperialism to contend in the world, both economically and in militarily, because you're military after all. Where does it get its weapons from? Where does it get its you know, logistics from? Where does it get its supplies from? Where does it get its food from? From the economy. So they had a need to contend internationally. And, you know, this is why, for example, If you include China, 80% of the production workers in the world are in the third world. And, you know, here's a statistic that shines light on what I'm talking about. Just a couple of decades ago, a little less than 60% of the clothes that people wear in this country were made in this country. Now it's 1% or 2%. They're made in places like Bangladesh and other places where there are all these garment factories viciously exploiting people, particularly women. So, you know, this was the changes that led, in turn, led to the changes in the U.S. economy where you had more of these professional jobs. And that's why, you know, along with the struggle, there was more opening for women. And this is what has driven this fascist movement, you know, and is why it's taken on this religious cloak, you know, but it's a real thing, this religious fundamentalism. Because if you look at the Bible, I don't care, I know a number of years ago there was these feminists who didn't want to let go of the Bible. And so they wanted to, you know, this is, think about it in terms of things today. They wanted to go through and change all the pronouns in the Bible. So instead of it would God, you know, would be he, God would be it. Well, here's the problem. You can change all the pronouns, but you can't change the reality. The Bible is a thoroughly patriarchal document from beginning to end, from the book of Genesis all the way through to Paul's epistles and all the rest of it. It's a patriarchal document, you know, horrific patriarchy, in fact, if you look at it. I mean, women should be killed for having sex before they're married. You know, if they're not virgins when they get married, you know, you have to show the bloody sheet to prove that they were virgins. I mean, first of all, not all women bleed when they first have sex, but leaving that aside, you know, you have to show the bloody sheet, or else the woman should be put to death in the town hall or the town center. This is a patriarchal document, so you can go changing all the pronouns, but you can't change the patriarchy. God is still going to be God the Father, the patriarchal oppressor. This is the way it is. This is the reality. So, you know, this is why this religion was, you know, a useful way to rally all these fascist forces, because if you took it, you know, look, there are liberals and progressive people who are religious, and some of them do very good things, and we should appreciate that and unite with them as far as possible in the struggle against oppression. And many of them say, look, you know, there's bad stuff in the Bible, just like there's bad stuff in everything. There's bad stuff in communism. You know, there's bad stuff in the Bible, yes, but, you know, we choose to focus on the message of Jesus, which is to do right by the poor and so on and so forth. Okay. You know, they're practicing what I call, you know, salad bar Christianity. They go down the line, oh, I don't like this one here, you know, like children who disobey their parents should be put to death. Oh, no, not that one, you know, but oh, you know, like feed the poor. Yeah, I can go with that, you know. In fact, the Christian fascists practice salad bar Christianity too. You know, if you start challenging them, what about this stuff here? You know, some of them openly will say that homosexuals should be put to death, as it says in Leviticus. But most of them will say, well, you know, that was the Old Testament. Now we got a New Testament. You know, we got a new covenant with God in the New Testament. So that's different. But you go to the New Testament and Paul is all about women should be subordinate to men. And he links it back to the Old Testament. He links it back to Eve in the garden. You know, when she's the one that got taken in by the snake and then she misled Adam. So now childbirth is going to be a burden for women because of that. It's all, you go read the Bible if you have time. You know, this is all in there. But so if you're a fundamentalist, what do? You take all the stuff that really leans heavily on this patriarch and his oppressive relations. You know, the Bible defends slavery, for example. Now you see some of these fascists openly saying, well, you know, slavery wasn't really that bad. You know, some of the conditions of the slave improved from how they were living in Africa. I mean, just horrific stuff like this. You know, and I see Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, made a statement where he said, you know, nobody started questioning slavery until the United States was founded with the Declaration of Independence saying that all men are created equal. Well, this is just absolute bullshit, including, as I point out before, I think some of the slaves at least were questioning slavery before the Declaration of Independence was written, including in the uprisings of slaves, even during the colonial days before the country was founded. But see, they lean on this Bible and this heavy religious stuff for two reasons. And I know I've gone on, but I'm going to just finish this point. For two reasons. One, because it is heavily patriarchal and it does uphold all kinds of horrific oppressive relations and slaughter of people who don't get with the right God and so on. If you don't believe me, go read the Bible with an open mind. The other thing is religious fundamentalism, and this is true of religion in general, but all the more so of religious fundamentalism, teaches people to be unthinking. It teaches people to accept things, quote unquote, on faith. It teaches them to be slavishly following religious authorities. And so this is very, if you want to develop a fascist movement, you need legions of unthinking people who are anti-scientific. And you can see it, all the conspiracy, you know, I saw somebody raise an objection about calling conspiracy theories, because they're not really theories, but leaving that aside. They don't deserve to be called theories. But leaving that aside, you got all these conspiracy theories, you know, and all the rest of it, all these people, QAnon, all the rest of these people, you need legions of unthinking people if you want a fascist movement. The exact opposite, by the way, of communism, which needs legions of critically and creatively thinking people. So this is why the Christian fundamentalism is such a, you know, powerful and useful rallying cry for all these people who basically their position is, and this is why they said the 2020, and this is the underlying reason why they all believe fervently, you know, with religious zeal, that the 2020 election was illegitimate and stolen from Trump. It's because they regard the people who voted for the Democrats, and we don't want them voting for Democrats, by the way, although in 2020 we did, and we can get into that too if you want. But in general, we don't want them voting for Democrats, but all the people who voted for the Democrats, you can go down the list, gay people, you know, the LGBTQ, you know, women, especially women, you know, there are lots of women fascists, by the way, we have to recognize, but women, especially thinking women, women who don't want to be subordinate to men, black people in their overwhelming, Latinos in large numbers, all these people in the eyes of the Christian fundamentalist fascists are illegitimate. So therefore, in their thinking, and it's just barely beneath the surface, if not right on the surface, in their thinking, if those people are the ones, are the reason why the Democrats won the election, then the election's illegitimate. And that's why they believe all these, you know, theories that have been, you know, and assertions and claims that have been, disproved about fraud in the election, because it doesn't matter to them, really, if it was fraudulent or not. It was illegitimate because all these people who were not legitimate, not real Americans, not what we want this country to be about, and should be put back in their place as violently as necessary, if not literally wiped out, all those people are the reason why we didn't win the election.
Okay, so that was Bob Avakian. It was from the RNL interviews, the Revolution Nothing Less interviews, three-part major interviews. And in this section, he's speaking deeply not only to the assault on abortion rights, what it concentrates in terms of the enslavement or the emancipation of women, but how this fits and sits within a larger context of the workings of the system we live under, capitalism, imperialism, things that are much more driving and defining than the superficial surface electoral battle, which is really a battle on the terms of the ruling class. But what is going on beneath the surface driving this assault on abortion, how it's bound up with the larger changes in the global economy, the economy within the U.S., the social position of women in this society, and how this assault on women's lives sits as a centerpiece and a battering ram in a larger fascist program, which is very powerful and is unrelenting right now and needs to be stopped, not by relying on these Democrats who are conciliating and capitulating to it constantly, but through seizing this moment, this rare time when the society is so deeply divided, to get organized for and wrench a revolution, to get beyond this system, wrench a revolution out of this crisis. He gets into that in the rest of the interview more fully, but I wanted to bring it in because it's connected to what we just heard. So what I want to do now is, as promised, I want to open up the phone lines to you. I want to invite you to comment on what you heard, to discuss what we're facing, to talk here today on the one-year anniversary of when the Supreme Court heard the oral arguments in the case that went on to overturn women's fundamental right to abortion, and all that that has meant for women across this country, girls across this country, and all that it portends very ominously for the future if we don't change this dynamic. And let me remind you, as you do, that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show. And at the end in that segment, Bob Avakian also talked about how it is and why it is that so many of this fascist base, which really is millions and millions, tens of millions of them across this country, believe that the 2020 election was illegitimate, and what allows them to believe the lunatic conspiracy theories about this against all the evidence to the contrary rests in, and he points to two fundamental parts of this. One is that they believe, and they've been trained to believe, that the people who voted for the Democrats are illegitimate people. Just think about that. Let that sink in. Black people in their majority of numbers, Latinos, immigrants, women who are more demanding of their rights and independence, the LGBTQ people, that all these people are illegitimate. And therefore, even if they voted, it shouldn't count. That is the worldview of this fascist movement. And it's part of what allows these people to believe absolutely baseless conspiracy theories, because they are driven by a deeper hatred there. And two, he brought in the role of fundamentalist religion in training people in unthinking obedience. And so I think these are two very important dimensions that would be worth people calling and talking about as well. We'll go to our first caller. We have Gregory on the line. Gregory, tell us.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, go ahead. Hi.
Well, you know, my question was, you know, I'm pro-abortion and women's rights. I can elaborate on men's restriction of men's reproductive rights. But my question was, pro-abortion, fine. Where would you say most pro-abortionists stand on capital punishment?
Let me understand why you're asking or making the connection.
Yeah. Well, the connection is, you know, you abort a life. It could be a zygote or an embryo, but it's still a potential human. So you're pro-abortion there. Where do the pro-abortionists stand, or if there's a majority or a stat, where would they stand on pro-capital punishment, pro-death penalty?
So I don't have hard numbers on that, and I guess I would say two things. My broad impression is that most people who are pro-choice in their larger numbers tend to be on the progressive side of things like capital punishment as well, meaning against the death penalty. As a package, those things tend to go together.
Yep.
Two more quick points, and then I want your reaction. One is that methodologically, we should all evaluate a question of abortion and women's ability to control their bodies, their lives, their reproductions, their destiny in its own right. And even if people who support that issue are wrong on another issue, we have to evaluate each question as it really is, not as a package. And then finally, there's no comparison between a zygote, a blastocyst, a fetus, a potential human being that is a form of life, but it's a subordinate part of a woman's body. That's not a person. And so for myself, I would be against the death penalty under this system or any future revolutionary society, because people are full human beings whose lives should not be taken by the state. It's harmful to them. It's harmful to the society. Whereas a fetus or a blastocyst or a fertilized egg is a part of a woman's body. And to tell her that she can't control her body is to reduce her to less than human. So go ahead.
I totally agree. No, I totally agree with you. And I understand. And thank you for the differentiation. I understand the differentiation. Obviously, someone who would be on death row or whatever, they're a fully grown human in an abortion situation. That's not the case. And then just quickly, if you got a second, you know, it's so upsetting what the Supreme Court did, right? Mm-hmm. Taking over women's reproduction rights, basically. My question would be, you know, if they're coming after women's reproductive rights and, like, owning them, what's down the line, I don't know how long, what's them to stop the Supreme Court, you know, isn't the next step they could tell men they have to have vasectomies, or if we need to have a population pump, men have to donate sperm? I mean, when will it stop when the government is going to take over not just women's reproductive rights, but also men?
It's an interesting question. I think it's not the most likely. I think Look, it's important to understand that abortion, oftentimes it's framed as a matter of control, intrusion into people's individual rights, intrusion into bodily autonomy in an abstract sense, you know. And you hear that even from, this is one of the outrageous things the Democrats do and a lot of the so-called reproductive so-called movement does is, oh, it's about bodily autonomy. And they don't like to use the word women. They don't like to talk about this as an assault on women. This is about forcing women to have children against their will as a form of enslavement, which it is, because it removes the issue that this is the assault on abortion is a patriarchal assault. It literally, and this is something Bob Avakian was speaking about at the beginning of the answer that I played, it literally is a form of revenge for the ways in which women have gotten out of their traditional subordinate position. And so I think, you know, it's not a intrusion into individual bodily autonomy in the abstract. I don't think it's going to come after men in the same way because it's not about abstract intrusion. It's about subordinating women. So that's how I understand that.
Okay. No, well, thank you for elucidating there. Look, I think what you're saying is, you know, well, the women have the ovum and the eggs, but you can't have a zygote or, an embryo unless you have the sperm. So you're saying I'm a little ahead of the game. I mean, do you think they're ever going to come after men's reproductive rights and demand vasectomies or demand sperm giving? Or is that just too far down the line? And, you know, right now it's about women and I'm in total agreement with you.
Yeah. Okay. So, Gregory, I want to say one more thing and comment to you. I guess I have to say it again, and I'm glad Gregory kept pushing on this because it's not understood well enough that without the right to abortion, women have their lives foreclosed. They drop out of school. They have to give up their jobs. They're saddled with children they did not want, cannot care for. They're trapped in abuse. The very fact that we have women in public life today, in academia, in the media, in sports, in the medical professions, in tech, in even facing all the discrimination that women face and all the sexism and harassment and violence that they face, the fact that women are in social life and politics today in a way that they weren't pre-1973, pre-Roe v. Wade, is directly owing to the fact that women have had a measure of control over their bodies, their reproduction. If women are forced to have children against their will, they are not able to participate in public life and society on an equal footing. And that is what's changed in the last couple generations with birth control access, with abortion, and with the struggle women have waged and the economic changes Bob Avakian was talking about. And that is why abortion is under attack. I literally have seen these anti-abortion fanatics outside abortion clinics praying to break the curse of independence that has afflicted women. That is what they're opposed to. That's why they're coming after abortion. So the drive, the Christian fascist drive, is about subordinating women. And again, I don't think it's going to come after men in that same way. Let's get David on the line. David, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, let's tell us what's on your mind.
Well, first, I agree overwhelmingly with your speaker and with you. I don't know. Or your speaker's name. The one thing that makes me a little uncomfortable is that the attitude that somehow the Democrats are so conciliatory and in that they're not valuable to us. But I think that in reality, that's what we have to work with to oppose this fact. And I think that it's important to recognize that we don't want to make the perfect the enemy of the good. Mm-hmm. I think the Democrats are arguing good. They're not perfect, but to denigrate them as almost useless, I think, is only hurting the fight against this religious and political fascism.
Okay, well, David, this you raised something very, very important, and I'm glad you bring it up, and I want to take the invitation to clarify why I say this. The Democrats are not the same as the fascist Republicans, but they are a ruling class party. And because of that, they will tell you openly that their interest is in healing the divides in this country, bringing this country back together. Biden says it all the time. The Democrats have operated this way all the time, even as it has meant conciliating and compromising and finding common ground with these fascists. For 50 years, the Democrats did not codify Roe. They had the chance. Obama said it was going to be his first legislative priority, and he had the presidency, the House, and the Senate. And then he said, no, I'm not doing it. They had the chance. They didn't do it. People who support abortion rights for decades, Hillary Clinton said abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, as if there's something morally wrong with women controlling their bodies, their lives, their reproduction. No, that's a great thing. Abortion should be as common as needed because it's good for women and good for society for women to have control over their bodies without apology. These Democrats never went after these fascists. They never called them out. They gave them the moral high ground. They conceded that there's something wrong with abortion, and they sought common ground, and they demobilized people who are outraged, who need to be in the streets. Abortion rights were won in the streets. Voting rights were won in the streets. Civil rights were won in the streets. Every advance for LGBTQ people. These rights have been won in the streets, not by relying on these Democrats. And it's when people funneled their energies into supporting one wing of the rulers against the other that we have been on a losing course for decades and now lost the Supreme Court ruling. And now we're in a time when these divisions are so sharp that there's actually an opportunity posed by this for revolution to get beyond this system where these are the so-called options. And so I would encourage you, David, and other people listening, the name of the speaker who I played, his name is Bob Avakian. And that's from an interview that is available at youtube.com/therevcoms, where he gets into what a revolution could open up, why it's necessary, how it's possible. And he lifts our sights to a world where never again do women anywhere know what it's like to have their bodies controlled, to be shamed for their sexuality or for their choices about reproduction, to be beaten, to be pimped, stalked, beaten down, sold into sexual slavery, any of this, and where the struggle against that is part of the struggle to change and uproot all forms of exploitation and oppression all over the world. He's written a constitution for a new socialist republic that gets into this. He's brought alive how we're in a rare time where this is more possible. So I would invite you and urge you to, again, go to youtube.com/therevcoms, watch the interview, comment on it, and we'll be getting into this more as we go forward. But it's important because the more that people continue, decent people continue to rely on these Democrats, the more we waste time we cannot afford to waste with an illusion, because they're not slowing this assault. They're facilitating it. So I know we have a couple other callers. We're running out of time. I do want to take the last couple minutes to play a song. We have Christine McVie, who passed away. She wrote this beautiful, a number of beautiful songs, but one of them, Songbird, is, I've read that it is a song she wrote imagining the feeling of the love from somebody after they've passed and their ongoing memory that's still present. And it's a beautiful song, and it's a beautiful way to remember her. So I want to close out with at least a little bit of that. Before we do, I want to thank Gary Baca for engineering, Henry Carson for producing. I want to thank the RNL, Revolution Nothing Less crew, for putting together the material that I played for you. I want to thank all of you for spending the hour with me and those of you who called. I will be back next week. This has been The Michael Slate Show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and this is Christine McVie. Thank you. We've got some time left, so I'd like to play this.